Hey guys, Maestro here, bringing you episode 67 of Maestro on the Mic. In this episode, I talk about the lessons that can be learned when the clinician becomes the patient. I actually recorded this episode while I was in Berlin, and I had the opportunity to be treated by an orthopedic doctor there. What did I learn? Well, the psychosocial component absolutely matters. Gadgets are pretty cool. It can be terrifying to be a patient, and nah, I'm not gonna give the rest away. You gotta tune into the whole episode. But first, DJ, gimme that heartbeat.
This is Maestro on the Mic,
a podcast designed to help you change your mindset and your life.
It is time for something new.
Join host Dr. Shante Cofield, also known as the Movement Maestro, on a journey to see the bigger picture.
Open your eyes.
Find your passion.
And discover how movement unites us all.
Let's get it popping.
This is Maestro on the Mic. I'm the Maestro, and you're about to get maestrified.
3, 2, 1.
Hey guys, Maestro here, coming at you with another Thursday shorty, except this time I'm recording it from Berlin, Germany. Life is really, really good right now. I came out here for the Fascia Research Congress. I'll probably do another episode about that to kind of recap it. But I actually just left Dr. David Boland's clinic. He's actually one of our newest rock tape instructors out here in Germany. He's an orthopedic surgeon and orthopedic surgeon, I should say. And I've been having some stuff with my knee. It's actually doing way, way better. But we were talking about shockwave therapy, and he was like, come to my clinic and see what it's like. He had actually seen a post that I did on Instagram. I was sitting in on an elastography seminar at the Fascia Research Congress, and they were talking about using shockwave therapy and then subsequent changes in tissue stiffness as measured by elastography. He saw the story that I did, looked up the speaker, was looking for some of his works and such because, well, he uses this treatment and wanted to see kind of the research behind it, if there was any. And long story short, I went and got treated today. So what the heck am I even talking about? Becoming a patient, right? And the importance of doing that every now and again. And yeah, it sucks to be injured, but there's so much to be learned. So maybe the correct way of phrasing this is not the importance of becoming a patient, because that kind of sucks if you're getting injured, but the importance of learning something and taking something away from that experience of being a patient. So I went and got shockwave therapy, like I said. We did some light, light cryotherapy. So not like gentle cryotherapy, but light cryotherapy. At the end, he did some diagnostic ultrasound first, and it was overall a really cool session. And for me, I took a bunch out of it, and it really tied in nicely to some of the things that I took away from the FRC, the Fascia Research Congress, that I went to this past week. So let's start at the beginning here. One, if a modality has worked for any number of patients, I mean, even just one patient, there's value in it. But if it's worked for any number of patients and it's been around, there's some sort of value in it. We have to understand that. And clearly something about it is working. Even if you just want to say it's the psychosocial effect, aka placebo effect, there's value in that. So, you know, I've heard about shockwave for years, and it's so interesting because you come out of PT school and you really don't know much, but you come out with some pretty strong opinions about things, oftentimes guided by your professors. And I know that I really did not view shockwave or light therapy or laser therapy very favorably. You know, I don't want to say I was that student that was like, where are the studies? But at NYU, they really drive home the point of evidence-based practice and all that stuff. And you guys know how I feel about that now. But you got to take a step back and say, hey, if some people are getting better, and usually it's a lot of people are getting better, what's going on? Let me go learn about this thing. The flip side, yeah, I think I kind of poo-pooed it because I was seeing patients who were going to other providers and getting that kind of treatment and then not getting better. But who's to say that they weren't doing other things? Let me rephrase that. Who's to say that they were not exercising? And let me rephrase that again. who's to say that because they weren't also exercising and doing the active interventions, that that's actually why they didn't get better? You know, perhaps the passive modalities were helping them, but they weren't reinforcing that stuff, right? I don't know. Where I'm getting with this is, one, we have to be more open-minded when it comes to reviewing or considering other treatments that are a bit perhaps outside of our wheelhouse or just outside of our familiarity. And then point number two, the stuff that we can learn from being a patient. It was really interesting because I'm sitting in there getting this treatment done. And as much as I teach and preach that when we're doing soft tissue work, when we're doing our tooling work, cupping, things like that, that it shouldn't hurt, I understand that when we're on the flip side of that and we're the patient, sometimes you want it to hurt. You want to feel something, right? I say it all the time. If you want someone to change their beliefs, their behavior, you must make them feel something. So he's doing this shockwave on me, two different types of shockwave, and I'm actually going to bring him on, don't worry, so he can explain this a lot more. There's two different types of shockwave therapy that he was doing, and it didn't feel great, I'm not going to lie. I wasn't like, you know, on the table dying or anything like that, but in that moment, especially with the second kind of ultrasound, which really you just felt it like in the bone, you just felt it real deep, it feels like it's doing something. Right. And whether or not it is, or whether or not I'm going to feel like shit tomorrow, maybe I feel great. In that moment, there is such buy-in. And we as clinicians need to remember that. And this is something I talked about with both him and one of our other instructors, Ollie. We need to see if we can bottle that and use that and figure out a way to do that perhaps in a less detrimental way. Like I don't think there's any tissue disruption or anything like that going on, but we have to understand the value of having people feel something. And you know, all that pain science stuff is, I said that's like I didn't believe in it. I do believe in pain science, obviously, but all of the pain science preaching that's going on is great until you're the one in pain. One more time for the folks in the back. All that pain science preaching is great until you're the one in pain. And then suddenly you're like, yeah, dig harder. I should probably take more medicine. I should probably do this more. I'm not resting enough. You know, all that stuff goes out the window when you're the one in pain. And I experienced that firsthand, or perhaps I should say first knee, today. You know, I'm sitting on the table, and especially the second type of ultrasound that you just really feel deep. I was like, man, I think I need this. And, you know, in my head, I'm also like, Chante, what's wrong with you? You know, bruising isn't better, harder isn't better, better is better. But the flip side, this is my first time receiving this treatment, and so I don't really know what makes it better or what, you know, better is. And we have to understand that when we talk to our patients, when we treat our patients, they don't know many times. And even if they do know, if they're in pain, they just want to get better. They want to feel something. They want to have belief that, yes, this thing is going to help me. So as clinicians, as providers, it is very important that you take something from any opportunity that you have to be a patient. And, you know, knock on wood, if you don't get hurt and you can't be a patient, you still need to go and reach out to these other types of clinicians, these other types of providers who are doing things that maybe you don't understand, or maybe that you don't believe in, or perhaps you don't believe in it because you don't understand it, or because you haven't felt something. And reach out to them and say, let's talk. Take me through a treatment. Let's exchange services. Because, you know, I'm sure that a lot of you guys out there, especially any kind of like pelvic floor therapists that are out there, or just physical therapists in general, I know that you know that frustration of these people don't even know what we do. They don't know how good we are, how much we can help them, because they don't even know we exist. They don't know what we're capable of. That's a two-way street, you know? As it relates to these other practitioners and providers that are doing things that you don't know about, that are outside of your wheelhouse, you don't know if maybe what they're doing could help your patients and help them quickly, right? We need to adopt that abundance mindset. None of this scarcity stuff. There's room for everyone. There's too many people, honestly, right? There's too many people with stuff. And go and talk to other providers and say, hey, let's collaborate. Hey, let me learn about what you're doing. Because one, you cannot fix everyone. You know, I guess 1A, the caveat there should be, we don't fix, we facilitate. But you're not going to be able to help everyone. There's going to be people that, whether they just won't drive with you or you're missing something or it's just whatever, they're not going to get better. You know what would be awesome? If you have someone else who's doing something else to refer them to. And the only way that you're going to know that is if you branch out, reach out, and you go into all of this stuff, everything. When I say all this stuff, I literally mean everything with an open mind. I'm looking at the timer on here as I record it, and this is going longer, and I'm going to keep it going because this is something I was sitting in the FRC, the Fascia Research Congress. I keep saying that so you don't get confused with, you know, functional range conditioning. I'm sitting in there and just thinking because, one, the presentations, a lot of the presentations were very mechanical in terms of their explanations for things, which means they were leaving out a lot of the psychosocial component of things, some of the biology of things, excuse me, the neurology of things. And that's a one-sided approach. And that can be, or that can cause us to be very limited in our view and our understanding. And it was interesting because a lot of the clinicians or providers that were in the audience were body workers. And so, in my opinion, you have this disconnect where we have this, you know, quote unquote hard science being delivered, but it's kind of like, well, how do I put this into play clinically? And then from the flip side of that, you have a lot of these body workers, you know, people who maybe call themselves healers, don't judge, you know, just take that with a grain of salt, you know, calling them, you know, body workers, let's say, that work perhaps a lot more on intuition and feel than by some of these hard science techniques or, you know, the elastography and things like that that I was talking about earlier. And they too get tremendous results. And I think that we all need to meet in the middle. And as perhaps maybe you're a more, you know, hard style or hard science clinician, and you can't roll your eyes when someone says the tissue talked to me or the tissue spoke to me and told me where to go. And the flip side, if you're more on the soft science side of things, you can't be put off by someone who really likes the research and really likes the science. And, you know, I'm listening to myself say this, and I'm definitely guilty of it, of both sides. You know, I very much had a big swing in my career and in my viewpoint and came out, you know, as a new grad and was very much about the science and the hard science and just that and, you know, rolling your eyes about certain things. And now as I treat more and experience more and teach more and learn more, it's like, hey, man, everything works and there's a lot of validity to some of these outside of the box, if you will, theories and to Eastern medicine. We clearly, that stuff works. It's been around forever. But just because we can't objectify it or quantify it, whatever, objectively measure it, it doesn't mean it doesn't work. And you can't just be like, ah, craniosacral, get out of here with that. We can't. It was actually pretty cool. We kind of saw a bridging of the gap occur. There's a scientist, Neil Thies. He was speaking about his, I don't want to say discoveries because they weren't that, but his research into the interstitium and interstitial fluid. And it's very interesting because the fascia people have been talking about that for years. Neil Thies comes from the histology side of things, the more hard science, and these worlds were not ever mixed. And they started talking about the same things, but they're using different verbiage. And, you know, Neil Thies puts out this research and people are like, oh my God, we discovered a new organ. And the people at the fascia world and osteopaths and such are like, dude, we've been talking about this forever. But we saw a bridging of the gap this week because they started speaking the same language. And Neil is here presenting and at the Fascia Research Congress. And we have these worlds meeting and you just start to see the possibilities, how many people can get help from this or can be helped from this. Additionally, he said something pretty cool that started to kind of bridge yet another gap between Western and Eastern medicine practices. And he was basically talking about collagen, interstitial fluid, polarity, and piezoelectric effects, things like that. But basically, he was talking about how these charges and such that are created within the tissues can change, can be stagnant, things like that. And he dropped at the end of that, can we say chi, anyone? So we know that that stuff has something to it. And by that stuff, I mean Eastern medicine and stuff that maybe you consider voodoo and woo-woo. And just because we can't put the hard science to it doesn't mean we should poo-poo it. And it was very cool because Neil was just like, oh, also, maybe here's some science for you. So you start believing. It was incredible. So what am I talking about today? What did I talk about today? I said a lot. This was longer than my normal Thursday shorties, but it's something that really resonated with me when I was sitting on the table and experiencing things from the other side of the table. There is something tremendous about putting yourself in the shoes of a patient. And Dr. Ellie Summers speaks about it, and she speaks about the fear side of it too, the vulnerability that exists when you're a patient and you just want to feel better. You just want to know that you're going to be okay. And you forget about these things when you are a provider and you don't either get injured or you don't go on that side of the table. And today was just a reminder. One, bridge those gaps. Keep your mind open to any and all treatments, because guess what? When your patients are hurting, when you're hurting, you want any and all treatment. You will do anything to feel better. People will go and get needles stuck in their eye if they need. They just want to feel better. Meanwhile, as a provider, you're sitting over here being like, there's no evidence behind it. It doesn't work. Guess what? Your patient doesn't care. They want to know that they're safe, that there's hope, that they can trust you, that you're going to do everything you can to help them get better. So bridge those gaps. Put yourself in those positions. And if you're not injured, all right, go and speak to other clinicians, other providers that do other things. Keep the mind open. Bridge the gaps. Learn as much as you can from those kind of encounters, those kinds of experiences. Okay, I am absolutely going to wrap it up this time. Not going to ask you for any likes or reviews. Just going to let you know that if you enjoy what I'm saying, if you like how I think, if you're picking up what I'm putting down, feel free to join me for a course. Yes, I listened to you. You told me you wanted a course about assessment, about intervention, so I went and made one. Moving with the Maestro from assessment to independence. I'm launching the course in Australia and New Zealand. Actually, when this drops, I will be in New Zealand about to teach the inaugural course. So if that sounds like something that's up your alley, that phrase always sounds kind of weird to me. If that sounds like something you're interested in, and this is for anyone, whether you are a clinician or not, whether you're an LMT or a PT or a trainer, a chiro, whoever, if this sounds like something maybe you're interested in, head on over to my website, www.themovementmaestro.com/maestro-courses. One more time for the folks in the back. www.themovementmaestro.com/maestro-courses. And maestro is spelled M-A-E-S-T-R-O. Or you can just go to the show notes. I get it linked there. Click on that link and it'll take you to the webpage that will tell you all about the course. And soon we'll give you the opportunity to sign up. If you live in the States, I will be putting out those dates hopefully by the beginning of December. If you're listening to this episode and it's already December, then those dates should be up. If you're listening to this on the day that it drops, they won't be up yet, but they will be up soon. 2019, the course is going all over the United States, and I want to connect with you guys. So if you're interested, if you like it, head on over there. If not, well, then thanks for listening to the episode. You know I appreciate you endlessly. Shutting up, getting out of here. Until next time, friends, Maestro out.